So Alice, this seems like a perfect question for you. Which pieces of writing advice get on your nerves?
The name of our show is kind of a joke to ourselves, Advice from an Unknown Poet. The idea is that we don't actually give any advice. And if we were to give advice, why would you listen to it? But I do happen to be an expert on writing advice. You name the book, I have bought it, I have read it, I have done On Writing by Stephen King. What we talk about when we talk about running by Murakami. I've got Twyla Tharp's The Creative Habit. I've got Annie Dillard's The Writing Life. I have listened to the audiobook of Big Magic, Jonathan. I've done it all. I've listened to it all. I love it. I'm kind of addicted to it because it is all that very satisfying process of feeling like you are doing something without actually having to write. It's all meta fiddling. It's all like, yes. And then I could get a new notebook and I could install Scrivener and I could like do the artist's way and take myself on artist dates. And the whole time you're not actually writing. And I love that because I'm terrified of writing. I'm terrified of writing badly. And so I have been in the past a connoisseur of writing advice. What I've realized in the last couple of years is that no writing advice actually works. If it did work, we wouldn't have those beautiful sections in the bookshop where you can go and buy a gorgeous book about how to be a better writer. We wouldn't have, I'm imagining, like poetry workshops or MFA programs or anything like that. We would just all be great writers because there would be this one weird trick that you can do to become a better writer. But yeah, the fact is no writing advice works. And so I guess my initial sort of way too broad answer to this question is all writing advice kind of pisses me off now because it's all bunk. And what I was thinking was it's kind of like, I've come to think of it as sort of like when you give somebody writing advice, it's a bit like telling them what to think about when they're having sex. It's like, well, sure, you could tell me that, but it's so personal. It is such a personal thing. In that moment, what is going to get me to the page is inscrutable even to me. And not even Liz Gilbert can solve this problem. So yeah, too broad of an answer to begin with, but that's my opening gambit for you.
So is the advice you're thinking about that you're reading and now furious about, is it like about how to be a person who writes? Like how is it how to like be creative and how to sit down and create? Or is it advice about how to write well? Or is it both?
Most of it starts out with how to get to the page, which has always been my biggest problem. And that's why I've been so addicted to these books, is because they all promise you. It's like any self-help book, right? It's like, oh, you read this book, you will be a mentally well, normal person. But actually, all it is just more information that's never actually going to become action. So a lot of the reason that I've gone to those books is because, like I said, I'm scared of the page. I'm scared of what I'm going to turn out. I'm scared that it's going to be bad. And so I love things like, I have loved things like Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way, which is all about doing a bunch of weird shit that's not to do with actually writing your own work. Like you do your morning pages and you do your artist dates and you do your reflecting about who your crazy makers are and all this sort of stuff. But then there are, in some of these books, actual tips, writing tips, and some of those have been sort of useful, but I think I could distill down, honestly, the only writing advice that I think I took on board and was useful and I still come back to is something that Eileen Miles said in a presentation when they came here to Melbourne. Write something, then write something else, then write something else. And it's so plain as to be almost dumb. It's like, just keep going. Just keep going. You'll get to the next poem. You'll get to the next good thing. Like, I tend to think now when I'm in the middle of a bad draft, like, okay, this is a poem on the way to the next poem. Like, I just had to write this shit to get to the next good thing. And that just comes from Eileen Miles. But yeah, everything else is kind of like, whether it was information about how to get to the page or tips about what to actually do once you're there, it's all kind of faded away because none of it actually made any difference.
I want to try out a theory on you as the connoisseur of advice. Like my and I think this is just a theory about advice about how to write well, but maybe it applies to the other stuff as well. The like classic piece of writing advice I remember from like 30 years ago when I was first starting to try and figure out how to write was write what you know.
Right, well, you know, we've all heard it. We've all been
Yeah, and
confused by it.
That feels really emblematic to me, and that like what I eventually realized about it is that it's a shortcut. It's a shortcut to what would really be better advice, but still imperfect advice, which is know what you write.
That's interesting.
So it's a really like safe way of getting you to knowing the thing that you're writing about, being knowledgeable, having, enough imagination of the thing, enough detail in your imagination of the thing, and all that. But it's one that makes you very parochial in the process. If you only write what you know, there's a whole universe of possible things and relationships to the world that you're kind of cutting off.
Yes.
So my hunch is that most advice about how to write well is really a shortcut. And I wonder how much we're inclined towards those shortcuts because we don't think of learning to write as like an apprenticeship.
Yes, such a
I feel
good
like a
point.
lot of the instruction in writing, at least the instruction I had, was like trying to figure out how to write the best poem you could write right then. There was never a sense that, no, at least no one told me what is obvious in retrospect, which is that I was doing apprentice work.
Yeah, no, but no, because you're sold this idea that like in this workshop, in this beginning writer's workshop, you might write a prize-winning short story. That's why you enroll. That's why you go
Yeah,
to the
exactly.
class because you're a secret genius. But like,
Yes.
of course you're doing apprentice work, and if they said that, no one's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think part of what happens is that advice stands in for a much more difficult conversation about what, in this case, poetry, what poetry is or what good poetry is. And there's always implicit in that an idea of what good poetry is, but it's never imagined. And so we end up like closing a lot of potential venues for imagination, experimentation, and exploration, because we're trying to get to point A as directly as possible.
Yes, yes.
And that has the problem of both like closing down a lot of potential routes to point A, but also keeping us from imagining point B, C, X, 4, and I.
Two things on that. So, one thing I want to refer to is recent, as of the time we're recording, episode of Slee Ricketts with Shane McRae talking about John Berryman's unpublished dream songs, but also as part of that conversation, talking about preparing to teach a workshop. And I'm going to try to paraphrase Shane, but I would encourage people to go and listen to the episode because what he said about this completely blew my mind. He was like, we prioritize or emphasize feeling in poetry workshops, and then that closes down any kind of critical conversation in the workshop because it's like, well, these are my feelings. Like, fuck you if you're going to criticize this.
And
And
if I remember correctly, he was talking about feelings both for the writer and the reader.
yeah, writer and
Right.
reader.
So
How do you, yeah.
both of them are responding based just on feeling.
Yeah, that made me feel like when I read that, I really felt. Instead of why are you breaking the line there? That kind of thing, like practical, technical shit that you can like actually get into to improve a poem. And Shane was talking about wanting to actually teach a workshop on, I think he was talking about meter and rhyme, or just essentially like technical tools. And I was like, oh my God, I wish I could be in that workshop. So that's sort of one thing. Yes, I think it is a shortcut. Writing advice is a shortcut because it's like all I need to do is to say this thing to you, and I'm going to unlock your secret genius, and you will be able to unleash your creativity, and you will write the great poem, the great story, the great novel, whatever. I'm actually realizing as you're saying this that I have received a very excellent piece of practical writing advice from my teacher, Joshua Megan, when I started learning to write in meter and to use rhyme in a particular way. And what he said to me was, if you choose to go down this path and use these tools regularly, you are going to suck for 5 years. And that was so helpful because it just acknowledged, like, yeah, you're an apprentice now. You are not naturally good at this yet. Of course, you're not good at it. You only just started learning how to do it. But it's so much easier to see when you're like trying to learn how to write a sonnet, for example, than it is if you're just enrolled in a general, eco poetry workshop. How do we apply a metric of what's a good poem in that environment? I don't know. And no one's, the workshop leader's not going to do it because she just charged you $350 for 2 hours. So, like, of course, everything you put down is the best thing she's ever read.
Or can be made into the best thing,
Yes, if you
or at least the best thing you could write.
perhaps if you, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like the kind of stuff that gets, yeah, the kind of feedback you get in a workshop. It's also ephemeral though. Like I can't even think of an example because it's all just so it's fairy floss. Anyway.
And to go back to what Shane was saying, and I really liked those episodes too. You do have to keep feeling in the conversation, right? Like you can't,
True.
like
True.
I because I'm equally wary of the advice that says this is the right way to think about a line, or this is the right relationship to have to meter, and you can, you need to know that, like, you can have a substitution here but not here. There is, I said this I think when we talked previously, like there has to be an experimental quality. And the experiment is not experimental in the sense of, becoming maximally distant from what's been done previously, but in the sense of we're always trying out the relationships between technique and context and effect. Those are probably finite in the sense that, like, the number of pieces of hay in a hay bale are finite, but like they're so numerous that you can't reduce them to a set of principles. You can reduce them to rules of thumb, but you need to be really wary of understanding that they're rules of thumb, because again, it can become another way of closing down your imagination and closing down that kind of experimentation.
I think that's right. There is one end of the advice spectrum, which is this is how you do it. You must do it this way. If you do not follow these rules, you are not writing a poem. And I think that's insane. And then there's the other end of the spectrum, which is like follow your feeling, find your voice. What is your voice? Nobody knows. Everyone's been told to find their voice since the beginning of time. And it's just not applicable. Like you can't apply that advice. You can apply the former advice and you can get good at it, but like you say, you miss out on experimentation and you probably don't get that much closer to a good poem that's interesting to read that actually moves your reader. But let me give you your opportunity to be furious. What is there a specific particular piece of writing advice that you've heard a lot that infuriates you?
So the thing that really infuriates me more than particular piece of advice, and I did write down some advice that I at least dislike, but the thing that infuriates me, and this is implicit in a lot of advice, and I've ranted about this in all kinds of places already, but like, is the tendency of to define poetry in ways that are really narrow and, generally speaking, wildly ahistorical. And so for a while now, and this seems to still be going on, I keep seeing very accomplished, influential people saying that poetry is a means of expressing, or a means of saying the unsayable, some form of that, of articulating the ineffable.
What
And
the hell does that mean?
I mean, I'm enough of a literalist that I really stub my toe on even understanding what that means. But I you know, if I think I get what people mean. Like, yeah, it's this thing that's about, impressions and intuitions, and this kind of constellation of sounds and images that isn't there to be interpreted, but is instead there to tap some pre-linguistic or super-linguistic or sublinguistic, reality that can't be described in ordinary language. I definitely recognize that many people have that experience with many poems. I feel like I sometimes have something akin to that. I don't mean to be dismissive of it as a possibility, even though I struggle with it. But as someone who really loves explicitness, who loves clarity and precision, who wants to be able to read poems that talk about things that are very sayable and are complex and important and rich, that drives me fucking crazy. That is, I think, the most fashionable version of it. But I think in general, people really want to define poetry, and they want to define it in ways that leave so many possibilities completely off the table. That's what gets me really pissed off. But I can give you some examples of just things that I think are bad advice if we want to do that too.
Let's do that, but also I just want to add to your like that kind of thing. My version of that kind of thing that pisses me off is when people start to make rules about what you can write about. Like what's a good subject for a poem? What's a good goal for a poem? Like what a poem should be doing. I just want to like really take my bat and my ball and go home at that point because I'm just like, why are you telling me how to have sex? You know, like why are you not trying? Why are you making rules about this thing that is like so personal for me? I just get out of my bedroom.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree. It's infuriating. And the thing that's baffling to me is every time you hear something like that, you can find so many counterexamples, so many things that aren't that I
Exactly.
think we would all agree are poetry,
Yeah.
or that you'd have to just like be like you if you really want to say those things aren't poetry, what you really need to do is just get your own word for the thing that you want. Like
Yeah, true.
we've already agreed that like poetry includes all these things, that these things are all poems. And so if you want to say these things aren't poems, sure, fine. But you're really working against like language and history. And if you want to say that's what good poems are, fine, sure. I'm not going to agree with you, but at least you can make a like case for that that doesn't seem just willfully oblivious to all things that exist. Or again, just come up with your own name. It's Flarfenugan or whatever.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so what's your list?
One of the ones that I'm always super wary of is submit, 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 publish early and often. Like the sort of race to recognition. And like, I'm not saying that that's not valuable for some people, but as advice, it really like I really dislike it, because I think, if you need some recognition, that's a very human thing to need, and do what you can to get the recognition you need. But again, like it works against the possibility of an apprenticeship, and it also just I don't know, I don't see how you can keep that from distorting your relationship to your own writing. Like having it so deeply attached, so like directly attached to publication, to success in some external sense, which is not to say that like I'm not desperate for those things. And maybe that's why I'm so resistant to that, is that I know how much power it has over me. But the race to publication, advice around that really gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Look, I think you're right, except that that advice has been one of the most, like one of the actually usefully, that advice has been one of the actually useful things for me. It is what got me to just deal with the horror of rejection and the bruising nature of that was to know that like my task as a poet was to submit, submit, submit. And I still, in the last couple of years, have set a very specific goal for myself, not for publication, because that's completely out of my control, but for submission. I'm like, you're doing one a month on average. You are submitting 12 times a year. If you don't do that, gotta wear a hair shirt and lash yourself or something like that. It's just, yeah, that's my goal, because yeah, I want the gold stars. I want the recognition. I want people to publish my work, and it's not going to happen if I don't send it out. And it is scary to send it out, and I, you know, you just have to move past that. So, yes, I do. Like I said, I think you're right. Every criticism you have of this piece of advice is correct, and yet I have found it very useful.
Fair. The Frost line, I think it's like no tears for the writer, no tears for the reader.
Oh, you don't like that? I always thought that was good.
I don't know.
You're
I think
like,
that
you shouldn't be
mystified.
crying.
Well, no. Like I mean, I'm a cold-hearted bastard, but I don't object to poems making you cry. It's that I feel like it mystifies writing a little bit. Like,
Okay.
I don't think you need to be. I think sometimes writing is a craft, and sometimes it's something stranger than that. But sometimes it is just figuring out the way to create this effect. And I don't think it's necessarily about being in that emotional state yourself in order to produce it.
Right. So you're saying, as a writer, maybe you can cry when you write the first draft, but you should then dry your eyes and start actually working.
No, not necessarily. I mean, but I'm saying it doesn't have to be a tearful process. It does, like, you don't have to be devastated while writing something devastating. And for some people, that's the root, but it's not necessarily the case. I don't object to that as a possibility. I object to it as a assumption of how things always work, or a description of how things always work.
I always took it as like, if you don't care, how can you expect the reader to care? That's how I took it.
Yeah, I think for me though, sometimes the caring is like more involved in the work of making something. Like what I'm caring about that moment is the fascination or the obsession of trying to figure out how to make this thing work. And I like to believe that that's a way that you can get to something that's moving, or whatever metaphor we want to use.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Any others?
Show, don't tell.
Yeah, show don't tell. I mean, it's a good stalwart. Comes up a lot.
Yeah, it's again, it's a good shortcut. It
Yeah.
like I think some of these pieces of advice identify things that go wrong a lot with apprentice writers.
Totally, but they're not the whole picture. If you just show, that's not actually going to make for a good anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there are poems that are really telling, that are completely alive and rich and complicated. I don't think it has to be shown. I think abstraction can also be fantastic in poems. It's harder to do well, maybe more likely to just be completely flat, but I think George Aupin, for instance, at times is very abstract,
Yeah.
and just thrilling for me.
Yeah, I love George
Although at
Opham. We've
times
never talked about George
yeah.
Opham before. He's so
Yeah.
great.
I think there's also a tendency sometimes to over favor originality. I've heard something to the effect of write what only you can write.
That's an extension of write what you know, isn't it?
A little bit, but I think it's towards a slightly different end, which is this idea that like the value of art is based on originality, on uniqueness, as opposed to, like Pope's lines, what oft was thought but ne'er so well expressed. Like that's another way in which art can be valuable.
Yeah, I did want to say too, thanks to all the Slee Ricketts listeners who wrote in with their own advice that they'd received that was annoying to them. One of the things that that thread proved in the group chat was that writing advice is alive and well, and people will not stop giving each other advice, whether it's useful or not, or like even asked for. People will just be like, yeah, here's another thing you should do. We're certainly never going to run out of it. Was there anything that stuck out to you in that little conversation?
Think there was, but I'm embarrassed to admit, like I read it back when it was happening and digested it, and I can't remember the particulars anymore. Was there anything for you?
I think just the impression I came away with was just like, wow, we will not stop trying to fix each other's problems. And none of us will take the position of like, and this is something that Matthew puts so well, is like, really all advice should only be framed as, here's what worked for me. This might work for you, but like, you've got your own history, your own goals, your own sense of what's good. And I can't really tell you what to do here. I mean, I think the only writing advice that actually properly counts is what you get from your very closest writing buddy friend who you have a relationship with, where they can tell you that you are absolutely off track here, and this poem sucks, and what the hell are you doing? Or, hey, this is great actually, but whatever they're saying to you, you know that it's like honest, and they know what you're going for, so they can actually give you advice that applies to your specific, set of goals.
The other experience I've had is somebody saying, this is this habit or tendency you have that is really holding you back. Like
Totally.
you need to let go of this because it's getting in your way.
Totally. Yeah, and only somebody who's close to you, who has seen like a bunch of drafts and some published stuff and knows what you're about, can say, hey, did you ever notice how, like, I was just on the phone before with Joshua Megan. He was like, yeah, you use a lot of headless lines, but you can do it well. Not everyone can. I was like, that's really nice. I'm really glad you think so. But he can see that tendency of mine, and he's like watching to make sure I don't like go too far with it. But that's a very specific piece of craft advice. It's not about, hey, you write a lot about love, maybe cool it with that.
In my imagination, I think the more useful thing than general writing advice is trying to enlarge and enrich and deepen our imagination of what good poems are and what they can be. The deeper our understanding of that is, I think the better chance we have of finding our way towards something we can make that's useful or beautiful or just good.
Yeah, but see, the problem with that, Jonathan, is that, like, what if I can't write a good poem? What if the poem I just wrote's bad? I can't live with that. I can't deal with that. That's, I need everything I write to be good.
Have you tried lying to yourself, blaming others, getting ferociously drunk? Because I feel like we have ways of dealing with this problem.
Yes. Well, I think we talked about that at the start. Hey,
Yeah,
yeah.
we
All
did.
our wonderful coping strategies. I just want to quote before we wrap up a little bit of advice that I have up on my pin board from someone who's not a poet. He is, in fact, a podcaster, I'm afraid, who I've been listening to since 2012. His name is Merlin Mann. He used to be like on the speaker circuit. He used to be one of those productivity bloggers. He would absolutely hate me describing him that way, but he has this speech that he did at a conference called Webstock in 2011, called "Scared Shitless," and I watch that like periodically because I think it's such a wonderful at the time that he gives the speech, he's like right on the verge of giving up on a big book contract that he has to like write a book about productivity. He's like just realizing in the weeks and months leading up to the speech that like he's not going to be able to write this book because he doesn't believe in anything he's saying. And yeah, the talk is all about fear of what we want, creative fear. And it's just, I think it's fantastic. And yeah, I love Merlin. I've been listening to him for years. But one of the things that he said somewhere, sometime on one of his many podcasts was, being creative is about doing things repeatedly without regard to whether you get a merit badge for it. And I have that written up and it's been on my pin board for like a decade and a half because, yeah, I want the merit badges. I want the head pats. I want the gold stars. I want you to think I'm good. I want everybody to tell me I'm good. But being creative is not actually about that.
I think we bring our whole selves along when we try and go anywhere. And
True.
all our contradictions and all our vices and everything. And I do think that appetite can be a motivating force. Like, I think, ambition and drive and, patience and all those things we need. One of the things that fuels them is the desire for merit badges, but you have to be super, super careful. I have to be super, super careful in channeling that appetite, because if it actually takes the wheel, I'm fucked.